Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
He's the man Talkers Magazine says is one of the most important talk show hosts in America.
We tell you over and over again that you're wonderful and you just don't get it. What's wrong with you?
He's Jim Blasingame, our small business advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Mr. Wonderful, at your service, as always. Thanks very much for hanging around with me. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. If you've been listening already, you're going to continue to be smart as you, and no doubt you've already feeling your IQ just surging just because you've already been listening to the Small Business Advocate Show. And you're going to get smarter too because our good friend Rich Galen is with us. Rich is the publisher of Mullings.com, the cyber column, the thrice weekly cyber column. He is a political operative and, in the interest of full disclosure, of the Republican persuasion. He's our good friend Rich. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you, sir. Nice to be with you.
It's good to have you back. Rich, we're all a little down this morning as a result, as everybody I think knows by now, about what happened at Virginia Tech yesterday. I was telling my audience in the first part of the hour, Rich, that if you want to know out of control school spirit, school pride, if you want to meet somebody who's just literally out of control about their school, meet a Hokie.
Oh, yeah.
I've got friends who are Hokies, and they're just out of control. In fact, they're so out of control, you can bait them and have fun with them. You know?
Texas A&M students are like that too.
Well, they are like that too. Exactly, and Alabama and Michigan and all those guys. But Hokies.
But a lot of those schools, I've thought about this a lot. I mean, when a school is like in Blacksburg or in the case of Texas A&M in College Station, where there's really nothing else there
except the
school. The school tends to, the students tend to, you know, build, you know, huge traditions because there's really not much else going on. But generally speaking, it works to their benefit because they stay very close for the rest of their life.
Well, they become part of a community, and when they leave, they just take the community with them.
Yeah, exactly.
And so that's what makes, not that anything could be any more horrible than what's happened. When you know that about this family of people in Virginia Tech, it just makes it even a little more sad. And you know, Rich, I want to just talk about what happened yesterday, and I want to make sure that we use all sensitivity. But here's something that I wrote down for myself this morning, Rich. We live on a beautiful planet. But we also live in a very dangerous world. And so here's my question. Should we be teaching our students, should we be teaching our citizens, is it time to recognize, in America at least, that we do live in a dangerous world? There are people out there, there is evil out there. Is it time to teach our citizens that concept, make them understand that concept proactively, not just passively, and teach people self-defense?
You know, that's it's probably not a bad idea to at least to offer it as a regularized, you know, not as a special thing, but as something that, you know, most people would sort of, like CPR. I mean, it's just something that's available, and a lot of people take advantage of it. Maybe everybody in, you know, at the Safeway doesn't know CPR, but the chances are very high that somebody will know it, and maybe that's the right approach. The problem with what happened, one of the problems that would happen yesterday is several of them. One is that the reaction to it may be, it's so easy to be an overreaction that suddenly there are the college or the university wants to install surveillance cameras at every door, at every building, or triple or quadruple the size of the campus police force. I mean, you know, at some point, I mean, you're right, it is a beautiful planet and a dangerous world. But at some point, you just have to accept the fact that it's a dangerous world, and say I'm going to deal with that.
Yeah.
And live my life. But I really don't want to be, in essence, in a lockdown, at least intellectually or emotionally lockdown situation, every step of my life, every day.
We already have that experiment, Rich, in our aviation. Our aviation is a lockdown environment. I mean, you have to take your shoes off to walk through to get on an airplane just because one guy in the history of aviation decided to blow up a plane with a shoe bomb.
Well, you know, I mean, there's a lot of examples of that. I mean, every bottle of anything you're going to buy on the shelves has some kind of safety cap on it because one guy or one person never caught put something in a couple of things of Tylenol, mm-hmm. you know, back in the 1960s, and
exactly.
the trillions of dollars that have been spent because of that one. So there's a lot of that goes on, and I think most people would agree that's probably not a bad idea. But
Mike,
at some point,
I guess,
you just run into a, you know, you say, okay, that far and no farther. I mean, in Washington,
exactly.
D.C., you can't come into, you know this because you're up here a lot.
Yeah.
It's almost impossible to go into any office building without having to stop and show a picture ID. Do you think
I call Washington the Tale of Two Cities. You got the beautiful city behind the ugly city, which is the ugly city is where the barricades are, and the beautiful city is behind the barricades. More on this and a couple of other topics when we come back with our good friend Rich Galen right after these messages. I'm Jim Blassingame. Stay with us. We're back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're visiting with our good friend Rich Galen, the publisher and the author and the accountant over at Mullings.com, the thrice weekly cyber column. Folks, you're going to want to subscribe to this. Go to Mullings.com. If you're a Republican, you'll love it. If you're a Democrat, you're going to want to know what he's up to. He has people. In fact, I think you also have some mugwumps who are subscribers, don't you?
Yeah, Rich? I think we got one of everybody. Yeah. You know, I just sent my tax forms in yesterday. As small business people, we understand this.
Yeah.
And for the first time ever, my taxes were fine, but we had to pay extra because my wife's company underwithheld.
Oh, no.
So this is the first time I've ever been on the nose with my withholding.
Bummer. Rich, I want to come back to this thing we were talking about. And by the way, folks, I'm going to dedicate the rest of this show to the memory of the 32 people who were killed by this assassin yesterday. Basically, that's what happened. What he was, a murderer. And I want to dedicate the rest of this show to them. I don't know who they are. We don't know their names, but whoever they are, and for their families and those that are injured, we send our best wishes and our prayers and whatever we can send them to help them. Rich, I want to come back, though, to what good can come from this. And to me, one of the things that good can come from this is what you said. I like what you said about the fact that at what point in time do we just say, you know what, enough is enough. Look, I'm standing up. I'm Jim Blassingame. I admit I'm resolved that we live in a dangerous world. I'll take my chances. Let me live my life. And here's an example. Here's an extreme example that might happen, that could happen. And I wonder if this wouldn't turn things around. I don't mean to be crude about this at all, folks. But, Rich, what would happen if one woman, we already know what happened with the shoe bomb. What would happen if one woman got on an airplane with a bra bomb?
Well, I mean, I think we all know what would happen.
I mean, where are we going after that?
Yeah.
Point is, at some point in time, don't we have to just say, you know what? If I die in this airplane, I die in this airplane, but I'm going to live my life. And let me tell you something else, whoever you are out there. If you get in my way and I think you're going to do me harm, you may kill me, but somebody will be right behind me to take you down after you kill me.
Well, you know, that's. I think some of that, Jim, I think maybe a lot of that has to do with your military experience and my experience in Iraq. And I mean, I think we're trained, you're trained, I just by osmosis learned to think a little bit differently. And you would hope that you would react that way. And I suspect we would, and a lot of folks listening to us would. I think what happens with young people, college students, because they have no experience and they're just so shocked by what's going on, by the time they can process it, it's too late. They've been taken
out of it. And of course, now, Rich, I'm not, as you know, and you and I, neither one, are making any value, any judgments about what anybody did yesterday. My point is, what do we do going forward? Yeah. Do we talk to our children and say, look, you know, this is how it is in the world, on planet Earth. It's a beautiful planet, but it's a dangerous world. You're going to have to look after yourself, and not, you know, we can't always wait for the police to come and save us.
And the other issue, especially with what appears to have happened yesterday in Blacksburg, is that is that it is absolutely 180 degrees incorrect to demand of the people who are charged with making decisions to be able to see into the future and make rational decisions.
Exactly.
Based upon the irrationality of a guy with a gun.
Exactly. I'm glad you said that. Let's move on a little bit. And
okay.
I am proposing, though, as we leave this topic, I am proposing that I'd like to propose that we all teach our children to learn how to live life courageously.
Yep.
And let's give them some training. Rich, I want to move on and talk a little bit about something I haven't talked about at all one time on my show before, and this will be the last time I will talk about it, and that's the Imus situation.
Yeah.
What Don Imus did and here's the thing to me. Everybody, I haven't heard anybody else say this, and I don't know why, Rich. Maybe it's because I'm wrong, but I've been thinking about this. And what Don Imus does was not comedy. It was not shock jock. Don Imus used ad hominem attacks on individuals.
Right.
If you were on his show and you left, he would call. He might say, you know, I like that guy, but he's stupid, or what? He would say things specifically insulting ad hominem about you, the individual, not you as a Washingtonian or as a Republican or as a Jew or whatever. Although he might do that too, but not you as a part of a class, but you individually. And that, in my opinion, is what this is all about. Don Imus used ad hominem attacks on individuals who turn out to be little girls who couldn't fight back.
Yeah, well, it's the last part that I agree with. The first part is, look, if you're going to go on the Don Imus show, you know what you're in for, and, you know, either you do it or you don't do it for whatever, you know, you want to sell a book, so you put up with it. But what he did and what got him fired was that he, and I wrote about this, I said, do not attack people who can't fight back. And attacking these women at Rutgers University who, I mean, it's one thing to attack Gwen Ifill, who although she didn't, she had the capacity to fight back. She
mm-hmm.
Let me I'll come back to that in a second. But the danger, and anybody who does commentary, as I do 3 days a week, you learn early in your career that it's fair game to take on, in my case in Marietta, Ohio, the city council or the board of health. It is not fair game to take on the woman who's checking you out at the Safeway. You can't do that because she can't fight back, and it may be really amusing.
But
to you,
even if you, but even if you did, though, if you felt that it was something you needed to do, you can only do it effectively if you don't sink to ad hominem attacks.
Well, I mean, that, you know, again, in the perfect world we were discussing earlier, that's probably true. But Imus had, you know, he'd been doing that for 25 years, and that's what he did. So you knew that's what he was going to do if you came up.
He went too far. Stand by,
sure,
quick
did.
Break. We're going to talk about some presidential politics when we come back after these messages. See how things are going with the smartest guy I know on the planet about that topic, Rich Gaylor. Stay with us, Tim Till. Welcome back. It's 7 Till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Rich Gaylor is our guest and our good friend, the publisher, the author, and the chief cook and bottle washer over at Mullings.com, the thrice weekly cyber column that I encourage all of you to subscribe to. I'm a subscriber, and I read his stuff every week, three times, except in the summer when he goes to twice a week. Rich,
in August.
One last thing on Imus, and I wanted to tie this in with the Virginia Tech thing. What good can come from the Imus thing? And here's what I think good can come from it. And I think people like you should can help this. And that is, whatever Imus said is being said by many others in other societies, in other parts of our society, I should say. Specifically, I'm talking about the rap artists and all that.
Right.
We should hold all the righteously indignant people who were upset about what Imus said, we should hold their feet to the fire about it, about wherever we find that. That should be the good that comes from this.
Not as we like to say in my neighborhood, not bloody likely. The realities, unfortunately, are that hypocrisy rules all, and the fact is that if the sponsors hadn't begun to drop, the big sponsors hadn't begun to drop, I think CBS would have suspended Imus and then put him back on the air. And until rap music, as awful as the lyrics are, assuming you can understand them, as long as they keep selling, you know, millions of albums, or you know, thousands of, you know, for millions of dollars, the record companies are not going to stop doing it, and you know, the people that make the money are going to turn a blind eye, and the media will not. They're just not going to pay attention to it.
Every time the media interviews Jackson or Sharpton, the first question they should ask them is, "When have you been picketing the record labels who are putting out this kind of gangster rap garbage?"
Yeah, well, I mean,
no matter what the topic is, they should ask them that first.
Yeah, both of those two guys, they're professional agitators, and I am willing to bet a lunch that one or both of them has made some kind of deal with both CBS and NBC, both of whom I must work for, to do racial sensitivity training for, you know, $50,000.
So what you're saying, they're shakedown artists, is
absolutely
basically what you're saying. Yeah, I agree with you. Okay, Rich, let's move on and talk about politics.
Okay.
How are the Republicans and Democrats doing, the candidates?
Well, it's getting interestinger and interestinger. The CNN poll that was released yesterday showed that both of the front runners, Hillary Clinton on the Democratic side and Rudy Giuliani on the Republican side, are getting reeled back into the pack. Mrs. Clinton is at 30%, and Giuliani is at 27%, which means that 7 out of 10 Democrats and a little over 7 out of 10 Republicans are looking for somebody other than the current front runner, and mm-hmm. that is a number that has been growing over the last month. If I had another lunch bet, before I'm done, I'm going to, you know, I'm going to have to sleep over at the Palm to pay all this stuff. But, I mean, it would not shock me to find that that two guys who are not in the race yet officially, who are Al Gore on the Democratic side and Fred Thompson on the Republican side, if they don't get in sometime around late August, early September, and end up actually winning the nomination, we have these two guys from Tennessee running against each other. And I said to somebody yesterday, and neither one will win their home state.
Yeah. You know, that's a good one. Hey, Rich, this reminds me of when you go to an auction. You know, professional people who are savvy about auctions know that if you want to buy something, you don't raise your hand when the first bid.
Right.
You don't run the bid up on yourself.
That's right. You wait until it just slows down to, and then all of a sudden you get in.
But you got to have your timing perfectly, because if you got to auctioneer with a fast gavel, you'll miss what you want.
Well, the thing that's changed this year, and nobody knows how it's going to work, is the fact that as many as 23 states may move up to February 5th for their primaries, which means that the primary season starts on or about January 14th.
That's going to change everything, isn't it?
And ends 3 weeks later. So this is going to change. Exactly. It's going to change.
1-5 Hillary in 2008 for nominee. 1-5.
One being the least chance.
Uh-huh.
I'd say no more than two. No more than two.
Okay. Who's going to be the Republican in December?
I think Fred Thompson.
That's brand new from last time.
Yeah, no, he was, you know, he hadn't done his, he hadn't said he was interested at all.
Right.
And as soon as he did, he got 14% of the, you know, people.
Hey,
saying,
Rich, thanks for being here. Good job today, as always.
Thank you, sir.
See you next time. Rich Galen, ladies and gentlemen. Don't forget, Mullings.com. Got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. And as you know, this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.